This is Radio Edge Talk. We are live on the air from the Open Education Conference, 16 conference in Edinburgh, Scotland. I'm getting a wee bit mixed up because we were just talking to the Open Education Practices people a minute ago and it's confused. I'm delighted to have Catherine Cronin, the keynote speaker from this morning, give a lovely keynote about open and what question it answers. And I'm just equally excited to have David Kernan, whose name I probably just mollicated, who I've known on Twitter and for a wee while. I'm kind of thrilled to have you both here. Catherine, could you maybe just start by giving us a sort of elevator pitch of your keynote this morning?
Yeah, I'd be happy to, John. And delighted to be here with David as well. And we're just going to have a little chat. I blogged about the keynote about 6 or 7 weeks ago, just trying to get some ideas from people. And basically I posed a question which said, if open is the answer, what is the question? And it's kind of an oddly framed question, but basically I know that we're in a community where a lot of people do open things. Focus on open educational resources, open educational practices, licensing, and I was trying to get at, you know, why, you know, what brings you to that practice. So there were a lot of comments on the blog and on Twitter, and that really informed my keynote to a great extent. There were people coming from the OER side who said, you know, it's really important that we provide access to textbooks and open educational resources, particularly from publicly funded cultural and heritage organizations. There were an awful lot of people that expressed the importance of open educational practices, and that we need to move beyond just focusing on access to resources, important as that is. And then there was a strand of comments about how openness becomes a value for people, how it informs what they do, and they very much see it as who they are. And then there's the tension around people who identify that way working in institutions that do not have an open policy or an open culture, and how limited our actions can be, you know, if we find ourselves in institutions like that where, you know, what we could do, our potential for what we could do is great, but we're limited, you know, by the institutional constraints. So that was the start, and you know, I suppose we can talk more about, you know, just kind of the importance, I suppose, in my conclusion about just moving beyond access to talking about equity-informed education, always asking the question, you know, who is this open for, and in what circumstances? And lots of times we make assumptions you know, that are not always beneficial to everybody based on our privilege.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've got not a deep knowledge of this, but I've got an interest in this because I've spent most of my time educating underprivileged people. Mm-hmm. And you can see that even if you give folk, if they've got access to resources, they maybe don't have the language or the skills or the background knowledge to access them.
Yes.
Now, one of the things, I've got a wee quote here that it's probably not a real quote, but something I typed when you were talking, and it was about participatory social change.
Yes.
And you gave a couple of examples of the home to vote thing in Ireland.
Yes.
And do you think that participating in that sort of activity is a push for the people who are taking part towards learning a bit about being open and learning a wee bit and then maybe picking up on open education?
Yeah, I mean, I've said this to a few people this morning. My keynote was very personal, and that was a hugely powerful connection for me to make. That it's not just about making these, putting a license on these resources and sharing this in my classroom. You know, my view of what I'm doing as an educator is to help learners develop powerful digital identities and voice so they can engage, you know, in creating culture, in, you know, civic participation. And I think we're really good in higher education at, you know, helping students learn to be, you know, nurses and software engineers and, you know, all the rest. But when those students leave, with or without a qualification, they're engaging in networked culture. So they have to be themselves as a citizen and whatever they're trained to be in this open, networked, messy culture. And they have to make decisions about who and how to be there. So we in higher education certainly should be walking alongside students as they develop those skills and not ignoring them. And to a greater extent, we ignore that. Mm. And we say, please, Corel, come into this space. We'll help you learn everything you need to know to be X. Now go out onto those networks and go forth and do your thing.
So David, you're here representing the followers of the Apocalypse, your blog, and as a follower of the followers of the Apocalypse, you very much are very often engaged politically, I would say. If you see some sort of parallels between what you're doing there?
I do, I think. I mean, one of the big things I took away from Catherine's keynote, which I really enjoyed all of it, with a lot of powerful stuff, but there was one little kind of subsection that you did based on Bond Stewart's work, which linked back to ideas, at least in my head, of performance and performativity. So it's the idea of firstly thinking, okay, I'm actually going to share something, and then you think, who am I going to share this as?
Yes.
I mean, and I think if you're talking about stuff that's more personal and or more political, that is an important consideration. If you're used to social media, if you're used to open practices, or speaking at a conference, or any one of the other millions of things that we do to broadcast ideas, you've got, I think, a character almost that you play in. It can also be always be a sharp divide between the character that somebody would play online in order to share a particular opinion or a particular fact or a particular link, and the complexity of who the person actually might be. So, I mean, one of the things I've been thinking about this morning is the performance of openness. I mean, why do people choose to perform as open practitioners? Why is that a label that we want to give ourselves? Mm-hmm. Why is that something that we see links between things in which a lot of the time there may not be real links in a way? I mean, I liked the examples that you gave about the campaign for equal marriage in Ireland, and I think that's a powerful story, but I didn't necessarily see it until you talked about it a bit and actually what it meant to yourself. I didn't see that as a direct parallel to what open education was, which is, I think, essentially in most of the conferences like this, it's not as politicized. We don't tend to talk any more about the political aspects of open.
Yeah. I mean, what are we doing in education? We are embedded in wider culture. Mm. So often we talk about education as the culture. So it's just about expanding that conversation and expanding, you know, the number of things we need to be sensitive to. You know, the world isn't comprised of just, you know, students and lecturers and policymakers, you know. I mean, we have lots of conversations about that. It's about bursting beyond that. And I know that that's important to you as well.
I think often there's a temptation to perform as if that actually is the world. I mean, a lot of time you will share something or say something that's only really of interest to actually a small group of people. I mean, you can make like an abstruse joke about metadata or something completely pointless like that, but because you're using a tool like say Twitter to do that, I mean, Twitter is accessible to everybody who would follow me or you for all kinds of reasons would see that and think, okay, that is something I don't understand, but that's actually informing my perception of who this person is. So it's not, it's almost layers of cultures. It's, a culture, a subculture, although I don't necessarily think all of the kind of resonances of that particular term are the right ones.
Yeah, Twitter is such an interesting example because I often think of Twitter, you know, when you follow someone on Twitter for a while, it's like building up a pointillist portrait of the person, and you think about any interaction that you observe as a point, and over time, you build up this really rich understanding of someone. You get to know their values, their sense of humor, their politics, and so on. So when we have the privilege of having those rich portraits ourselves, you know, because we've been in these networks for some time, we have a little more freedom about making the errant or the odd tweet, because we know that'll be in the long tail. You know, it might be way out here, but, you know, my identity. However, when we're speaking with new scholars or students or whatever who are just getting on for the first time, that's about this question about who am I sharing as, it's really significant. They don't have a portrait yet. And, you know, and each dot is going to be very, very important to them.
It's a much bigger part of the whole, isn't it, that you've got each individual interaction to start with. I mean, you kind of almost tread incredibly carefully.
Exactly.
To kind of get yourself into the field. To get, I mean, if there was a lot of people that are here, this is their first conference about open education. There's quite a few people that are here, it's their first academic conference. And you think, okay, the way they're, they would be performing is a lot higher stakes for them.
Yes.
And I mean, we have to privilege that. And I mean, we have to be especially tolerant of that and especially accepting of the fact that it's just a lot harder if you've done less of it, if you are still building a reputation.
Absolutely, And I think I don't always see that kind of sensitivity around that. You know, there is some, there is a discourse that says, you know, open is good, let's be open, let's do it. And that sensitivity that you just described is essential.
I mean, back in the days of UK OER, this was an English-funded program of open education resource activity. There was a lot of work done on the attitude of academics to OER, and a big factor that would stop a lot of people initially from releasing their resources is their lack of confidence actually in the resources themselves. They say, okay, I can release this. And it actually might not be any good. People might point and laugh at it. I mean, you and I are in a situation where we can post a half-formed thought or consideration or a vague connection or something that occurs to us.
Yes.
I mean, like we're doing now, but we're just kind of basically riffing and making stuff up. I mean, we can do that, but because we're confident in what we've done previously, then we are, I suppose we are almost have a lower quality control barrier almost, that we are going to share things earlier.
And that's privilege, but it's about being aware of that privilege, and that was why I shared that quote by Sava Singh.
Yeah.
Because I think she really nails that, and you know, she's going to be speaking this afternoon.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to getting to that one. I was also really pleased that you cited Tressie on this stuff. I mean, she's a really important writer in this.
She's hugely important.
And even a little tip of the hat to Audrey Waters, who is somebody that, I mean, really struggles with this, and not because of any concerns of the quality of what she does, but because of the fact that she is doing such risky things. She's speaking out against a billion-pound industry, which a lot of people have invested large parts of their identity in, and she, I know, she suffers a lot with that. And, I mean, one of the most powerful, I can't remember which conference it actually was at, it might have been at the old conference,
Yes.
Where she spoke and she talked about those experiences and the mm-hmm. I mean, and the fact she gets death threats.
Yes.
I mean, you get death threats from writing sarcastic things about EdTech startups. What's going on?
I mean, you know the name of Chezzy's blog is Some of Us Are Brave, and that
describes
both Chezzy and Audrey really well.
I think that's a really nice place just to wrap up. Can I just say thank you very much, Catherine? I think that the fact that your keynote came out of something developed on your blog, mm-hmm. crowdsourced in part, is just wonderful example of, you know, eating your own dog food.
Yes.
And a huge thank you. And
I love that metaphor.
David, a big thank you to you. You always make me think and always...
For being you.
Yeah, yes. Me think that this is too hard for me, really, but if I hang in, I can get a bit. So thank you very much for being here. If you're listening out there, folks, we'll be back later on, either broadcasting some sessions or talking to some other people. This will be stuck on edutalk.cc as a podcast at some point. Thank you for listening. Cheers.
Thank you.
Thank you.